Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. Episode number 69. This is a good podcast this week.
I really enjoy. We laughed the most we've ever laughed in this podcast.
There might be a spell in the middle of this podcast where almost, I've not checked the audio yet. We're laughing that hard. I'm just going to put a pre-warning in there. You might want to turn it down at that point.
Yes.
Because guy goes into a character.
Yeah.
Which I've not seen before, and I'm not sure if I want to see again.
I think you do want to see again. You really enjoyed that character. But today was a good one. It was our first one sponsored by our new sponsor, which we're going to come on to it when the podcast starts.
We talk about Augusta.
We do.
Picks, who we want to win, who we think will win, and an outsider.
Yes.
Like I said, we've got one of the best Dear Rick stories ever. I'm not sure how good
the
advice.
Not the best answer ever, though.
And that's proudly sponsored by our new sponsor as well. We've also talked about...
Go on, try and remember.
UK versus America.
Yes.
Who has more fun on the golf course? Which setup is more fun?
So if you're a UK listener, it's worth listening to. If you're a US listener, it's worth listening to. And if you're neither, then you can have the really good opinion. You can sit on the fence and say, actually, I've been there. Yeah, you can have an input
as well. So that's a really good section as well. We also answer some of your questions from Facebook, whether I would sign with Nike again, and if I would, why? And also whether I'd look at another clothing sponsorship. And we answer some more questions about if I won the Masters, what would be my favourite meal?
Bit of a letdown your meal, really. Yeah. I think on hindsight, you could have done much better than that. But
Maybe. When I do win it, we'll figure out what happened. Also, we talked about, really went in quite depth, about my first round back, my first break 75, which hopefully you've watched. And if you've not, it's on YouTube. But I talk about the highs and lows, how I could do better, and hopefully I will do next time.
I enjoyed today. I really did. I think we've actually done this early, a couple of days earlier than normal, to get it out ready. We've got Easter break, so having a couple of days off. It's a good one.
Oh, yeah?
I am, yeah.
All right.
You're not allowed at me, though.
So, guys, enjoy the podcast. Rock, paper, scissors. I want to do it.
Yeah.
One, two, three.
Winners always win.
You ready?
Okay, I'm going to count you in from 2-1, go.
Welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. I'm your host here, Rick Shields. I'm here with producer Guy, and we're excited because this episode and the next 10 episodes is sponsored by Motor Caddy.
Powered by Motor Caddy.
That sounds good, doesn't it?
Sounds really good.
We're excited because it's a partner that we have been in talks with for a while, and I think it's going to add a lot of value to the podcast. There's going to be some exciting giveaways that you guys are going to get involved in, and we're also excited to take some Motor Caddies out on the golf course.
We are indeed. But let's just take a step because we've done... This is 69, did you say it is?
Episode number 69.
Nice. And we've kind of joked about sponsorship before, haven't we?
Yes.
But equally, we have held out until we found a sponsor that we really felt would fit what we wanted to do.
Correct.
And also, we are committed to adding value to our listeners, and we don't want to just start pushing things down people's throat. Unless it's your mini egg bars, etc.
Of course.
So Motor Caddy, for those of you who aren't aware, possibly more in the States, because I didn't realise this, but electric golf trolleys, and that's what Motor Caddy are. They are one of the world's leading trolley brands, and they specialise in electric trolleys.
Yes.
So I didn't know this. I think you might have known this, but apparently in the States and in America, electric trolleys aren't really a thing yet.
No. Over here in the UK, we see them riding around fairways every day because the culture here in the UK is to walk when you play golf. Mm-hmm. And unless you're using a push cart, which again are not very easy to use and, you know, take a lot of strain, electric trolleys, motorized push carts, which I think they're also known as in the US, mm-hmm. are very, very popular over here. In the US, it's you kind of see buggies and you see golf carts, but there's definitely a trend now moving towards getting fitter, getting healthier, walking the golf course. And there's no better way than having a motorized, effectively, a caddy that follows you around or you push around, or there are actually some options where there's a remote control version. Well,
that's
as well.
One that you've got, the remote control one. But yeah, so I actually, this is why when, so about, how did this start now? Probably about 3 or 4 months ago, one of the guys from Moto Caddy messaged me on LinkedIn, slid into my DMs, and he just said, oh, we really like the podcast, we'll listen to it at the office. And that won me around a little bit. So I know they listen, which is good. They enjoy what we do. But I grew up, and I've actually touched on this bit, I think, before in previous podcasts. At the golf course I grew up at, which was very, very hilly, the culture was that all the juniors who were really into the golf had electric golf trolleys because, yes, you could have a pull trolley, but on a hilly golf course, that actually used a lot more energy. And when you get to that level where you actually want to play good golf and you're concerned about your score, you want every advantage you can get. And if you've walked 4 miles or 10,000 steps on a hilly golf course, pulling a trolley or carrying a bag, you're not going to perform as well on hole 18 as your competitors are.
No.
So for me growing up, it was very kind of normal to use one. And when you use a normal kind of push trolley in a bag, it's around 17 kilos of weight. So over 4 hours or 4 miles, whatever you want to call it, that's a lot of stress, a lot of strain.
Sure is.
So it's something I've always used, I've grown up with. So when they wanted to approach us about sponsoring the podcast, I thought, well, that's a product I believe in. That's something that we like. Let's do it.
Exactly. And you know what? They've come on leaps and bounds. You talk about when, again, you growing up, and I remember it back in the day, I didn't particularly play at a hilly golf course. So the juniors at my place didn't particularly have them, but it became much more popular culture. But they were dead bulky. Battery was huge on it. They weren't very easy to fold. Well, that has changed enormously because they're so much easier to fold these days. The style and the design on them are fantastic. And there's an amazing range of motor caddy electric trolleys that you can see on. And if you want to visit the website, we'll put a link down below. There's some amazing options, some that have like downhill control. I mean, that's quite a cool little feature.
That's the one I've got, the M5 DHC.
I tell you who needed that. The guy on the Nightmare Golf story
from
last week.
The water. Yeah, exactly.
There's also ones with GPS. As I mentioned, there's also ones with remote controls. Lithium batteries as well, so you can last 36 holes and extra. They are definitely now becoming a very integral part of what I would class as a modern golfer's toolkit to help them play better golf.
Well, I went back to, as I've said last week, I've rejoined my old school golf club, Puffwood Golf. And I went up on one day this week, I think it was, well, I can't remember what day it was, it doesn't matter. But I went up to, I had to pay a couple more fees for like England Golf and golf insurance. And I went to the old pro shop where I spent many a day working and sitting there eating Mars bars and stuff.
Did you work in the pro shop?
Yeah, for about 3 years.
I didn't know that.
I was the number one grip fitter, spike remover and Mars bar salesman in the Northwest.
No way.
And loads of the members who, some of which obviously I know really well, some of which I kind of knew the faces of, some I'd never seen before because I've not been there for a while, but every golfer, certainly the hardcore ones, have an electric trolley. So we wanted to kind of introduce this today, and it's not something that every week we start going about all the time and trying to sell. Ultimately, if you want an electric trolley and you want the best, go to Moto Caddy. Also, we have followed them on our Instagram accounts. If you follow at the Rick Shields Golf Show, it only follows 3 people.
Wow.
Well, 3 accounts. Wow. It follows Rick Shields.
I'd like to think it does.
It does. It follows Guy Charnock.
Well, yeah.
Of course, I set it up. Of course, it follows me. But it also follows Moto Caddy. So if you want to find them on Instagram, you can either search Moto Caddy, which is really easy enough to do. But head on to our Instagram at the Rick Shields Golf Show. Click the following list and you'll see them straight up there.
So, yeah, spelling MOTOCADDY, electric trolley to help you play better golf, and proud sponsor of the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast. Like we mentioned, for the next 10 episodes, And also there's a section in this podcast and for the next 10 podcasts, the Dear Rick section is also powered and sponsored by Motor Caddy. So if you have your story read out in the next 10 weeks, and I believe we've had a massive influx of emails, we are going to randomly pick somebody at the end of the 10 weeks. And not only the first pick is going to get an amazing prize, but also the second pick out of the hat is also going to get an amazing prize from Motor Caddy. So effectively, if you get your story read out, you've got a 2 in 10 chance of winning. A 1 in 5 chance of winning.
I'm sold. But you're right, we've had loads of Dear Ricks. This week's, we'll come on to in a bit, is an absolute banger. But yeah, Motor Caddy said, let's give something away to the audience. Let's make it a Dear Rick prize. Let's sponsor that. So why not?
Exciting. So go and show your support to those guys, because it helps us make even better podcasts. And we've got some exciting news, because this could be, I don't want to preempt this because there's a lot to go on yet. Mm-hmm. This could be the last time we film and record the podcast in where we have been filming at the Marriott, because we've got some really exciting developments on the new podcast studio coming together. It's going to be tight for next week, but there's a possibility.
I'm getting more and more excited as the day goes on, as the days go on, because it's looking more and more like it's going to be a sick studio.
It's going to be ridiculous. Right, Masters Week.
Before Masters Week's important, but before that, I want to talk about your first round of golf back.
Oh, yeah.
Because everybody has now seen it. We are actually recording this podcast a few days in advance because of the Easter break. So this is actually only Thursday. You're listening on probably the Tuesday. But everybody by now has seen your first round back and your first break 75, where you played at the Marriott Worsley Park, and you shot...
I didn't shoot 75. I didn't break 75 anyway. It was disappointing.
People know the score by now, so you may as well say it.
All right, has everyone watched?
Well, this is Tuesday. Went out on Friday.
If you've not watched, I'm going to break the news.
So yeah, it's your fault for not watching it, yeah.
So I went round 18 holes at Marriott Worsley Park, which is par 71. One of my favourite golf courses, one that I know like the back of my hand, did a load of filming here. I honestly thought it would be a start that would put me in a good state for the next 12 weeks of break 75s, and shot 77.
Not horrendous.
Yeah.
It started off quite horrendous, didn't it?
Pretty bad. In summary, I've worked out two things, and I didn't say it in the video, but after I've mulled it over, there was two really important shots that really symbolised why it didn't go particularly my way.
Talk to me.
Two bunker shots.
The one where you lost the ball.
I lost the ball out of a fairway bunker.
Yes.
That was quite tricky though.
It was a hard shot.
And the bunker before that, the third, fourth.
Was that the par three? Yeah. I can't remember what you did with that one. Did you put
it big? Through the back. So both bunker shots resulted in two double bogeys.
You know what I learned from watching you play golf? I think I said this to you at the time. That golf on the driving range, on a simulator and stuff like that, sounds obvious, this is so far removed from real golf, because you hit some shots that were quite bad with the driver, for example, whereas if you hit it on the simulator, it's gone left, let's put another one down, smack it, and that, and then you look at the good one. But it sounds obvious, in real golf that doesn't happen. Every shot counts, doesn't it? Literally.
I must admit, I didn't hit my driver great, and there's definitely some teething issues there, and whether I've got quite the right one, whether I should go for the Max G425, whether I should put the weight slightly more in the heel, more towards the toe, sorry, for a more fade biased. But yeah, as much as my driver was bad, it actually didn't put me in that much horrendous trouble. So I didn't lose a ball off the tee. I hit a lot of shots left, but they weren't in trouble. But on another golf course, they could really have been in trouble. So even though it wasn't great, and I agree with you, I didn't hit many fairways at all, when I was out of position with the driver, it wasn't horrendous. So yeah, bit of teething issues there. But just two clinical mistakes. I forgot early morning. And again, this is something I would definitely say exists. So a couple of days before playing, I went in the home simulator and hit a load of shots to try and work out my distances. Mm-hmm. Close setting, and wrote them all down, jotted them all down. So I knew roughly how far I was hitting a 7-iron and that 5-iron, whatever. Out on the golf course, and when you're out there, and we played early, we played 7:30 in the morning with Steve Hindle here, who's the golf manager from Marriott. I forgot that things like the ball doesn't travel as far when it's cold. Even though it was a lovely day, it was freezing cold in the morning.
Wasn't the morning, yeah.
So there were so many shots where I massively underclubbed. The second hole I underclubbed, missed the green. The fourth shot, oh no, I did all right there. The fourth shot, the par three down the hill, underclubbed, found the bunker. Mm-hmm. And it's such an easy hole, that. Like, and I made double on one of the easiest holes on the golf course just because I underestimated the conditions and how much that would affect my shot distances.
Yeah.
Just things that, you know what, you just forget about doing when you haven't played golf for so long.
Well, it's like you've said before, you hit what appears to be a lot of golf balls, but don't play a lot of golf. And I know it's so, so different. It that tee shot you're talking about, downhill par three, that exact shot on the simulator on GC Quad, you might have gone, oh, I'll hit that a bit soft, or maybe the wrong club. But actually, in real golf, like you said, you went into a bunker, tricky lie, put that through the back, come off with a double. Like, one not even that bad of a shot caused a double bogey.
Exactly.
And that is golf, isn't it? It's hard.
Exactly. That was the other thing. Maybe, in hindsight, again, I've not hit many bunker shots in the last 3 months. Like, and I remember getting in that bunker on the fourth and thinking, I can't remember hitting a bunker shot like this for 4 months, 5 months, or whatever it may be. Maybe even longer, because bunkers, even the back end of the year, were very different to the bunkers now as we hit spring. So it was very rusty. I made some clinical errors. I resolved it okay. In hindsight, I would have loved to have done it again and played better. And I would have loved to have started this series with a break 75. But let's be honest, and this is why we're making these videos, that's golf.
I've got a question for you then.
Okay.
And I want you to be honest. And I'm not literally asking this. I'm not putting a... We've got 9 more rounds to go. No, we've not. We've got 11 more rounds to go. Soon 12, aren't we? We don't know what courses are all going to be, which is the exciting thing. We've got a couple lined up. We've got a few that we're kind of thinking about. We've got some that we don't even know yet. That's what's exciting. Not that it should have done, and it was your first round back, but did it knock your confidence in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, big time.
Did it?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I just felt like... You know what I forget, and I act all cocky, and I act all like I'm going to beat every YouTuber under the sun. And I do honestly believe in match play, it's a totally different game. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as I shot 77 shots on whenever it was this week, I think in match play, against somebody else who might have shot 72, it wouldn't have been that bad of a match. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, like, because your bad hole's a double. We're just going on as a loss, exactly. Not a double bogey.
So I had two double bogeys there on 4 and 5, which is a dead easy par 3, a dead easy par 5. I mean, really, the par 5. I mean, that was effectively 3 shots worse than what I should have expected on that hole. And obviously the hole before, just on 2 holes early in the round with a scorecard in my hand, ruins it for me. Mm. And so, yeah, that did dim my confidence. And again, you know what I didn't like? And this is something what made me stop playing tournament golf. I hate that feeling when you're not playing well and it just feels like every shot you just get a bit unlucky.
Yeah.
Or you just don't. You get a few lip outs when you don't want them, or like that bad lie I had on the bunker shot on number 6, where I had a really awkward stance and I was dead, and I hadn't hit 2 bad shots to get there. I hit a good drive and a good 3-wood to get there. The ball had just trickled in the bunker, so I had a really awkward stance 50 yards away from the green, a really hard shot anyway. And you think, God, like, give me a break. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And where a few putts don't lip in, they lip out, or do you know what I mean? It's just, it feels like, and that's what I really didn't like about playing tournament golf. When it wasn't going my way, it's sometimes really hard to like snap out of almost what your perception of a bad luck.
Yeah.
Even though it's probably not bad luck, it's just rubber the green or well, whatever it may be.
It's because, sounds silly, if you hit a tee shot, I don't mean you, if we hit a tee shot into the trees, we almost get then think it's bad luck when there's not a way out of the trees, but you hit it into the trees. Exactly. So it's kind of like, it's what you deserve, but yeah, it feels like bad luck because sometimes when you hit a shot in the trees, it might be a really clear way out. But if you put yourself in bad positions, or if you hit in the bunker and you're plugged, it feels bad luck, but you've put the ball in the bunker.
Yeah.
So you are right, but bad shots lead to bad lies, which lead to bad scores, don't they, ultimately?
The other thing I think I need to change my mindset on, and I didn't touch on it in the video, and again, maybe something later. When I normally go and play golf, I'm trying to par every hole, birdie every hole, and shoot level par or under. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my mindset going into golf. I think I went in with a different mindset because I felt like I had more shots to play with because I was trying to break 75. Do you get what I mean?
Because you were seeing that you had a 3 handicap buffer, almost like, or 4 handicap buffer.
Like, yeah. I almost felt like I wasn't as, I don't know. I almost felt too relaxed on a few too many shots.
You know what, Matt? You know when I think you're at your best? When you're like 6-0 off the 9 and you think, well, I just need to shoot a couple under that 9.
And that's
even if you drop one shot, it's only one shot through exactly. 9.
And that's why I think I need to start almost a round like that. Like, I mean, I got off to a really bad start. But either way, yeah, I think it did dent my confidence a little bit. But I can also look at it logically and go, you know what? I actually know why.
Some positives as well, though.
Yeah, I know why I didn't shoot 75 there. And I know why I did rack up some ridiculous scores on some holes.
Question then. So there's 12 rounds of Break 75. One's obviously in the can and done. Realistically now, I know we don't, again, we don't know what course we're going to play. We don't know what par they're going to be yet. So it's a bit of an open question. But how many do you want? Well, two questions. How many of the rounds do you want to break 75 at? I'm guessing that's everyone. But how many do you expect you'll actually do it at? What number would you take? Now, if I could write a number down, say you're going to do it at this many courses or this many rounds, how many would you honestly take? So let's go out of 11 because one's already done. Out of 11, would you be happy with 50%? So let's say five rounds.
I'd want more than 50% now.
So 6 or 7 you want to do it at. Okay, it's interesting. Yeah. It's doable.
Well, yeah, I do honestly think it is. And like I say, it's one of those things, it's the first time proper scorecard in my hand for a long, long time. And, you know, and we've built it up. And I think that's the other thing that, you know, we don't make this easy on ourselves. Like, we've told the world that we're going to do this and we built it up. And there's pressure. Like, I do feel like my heart beats when I'm out there playing. I'll see people at the weekend go, oh, I shot 72 today, or 74. And you think, bloody hell. But also, like, it is a slightly different mindset because it's not on camera, it's not being filmed. I know I'm putting myself out there.
I know, but this is what we have to remember. I think you do a good job at this, but we could fake it if we wanted to. We could go out and shoot it and edit it that you shoot 62.
Why didn't we do that?
Because we're honest and you're relatable. So the fact that you're telling your highs and your lows, that's what people enjoy. It's relatable. I know it's you, it's not me, it's you that's kind of putting yourself out there. But ultimately, that I think you shooting 85 and having a lot of kind of advice or feedback or thoughts, feelings after that and passing it on to the audience is almost as good as shooting 65, because at the end of the day, if I want to watch amazing golfers, I'll put the Sky Sports on.
Yeah,
that's not what people watch YouTube for, is it really?
No.
You know, nobody really is ever under the illusion that you're the best golfer ever lived, but they like watching you play golf.
Do you know what I need to do? And I think this is now before next week. I need to remember how to play golf. Do you, like,
yeah.
I might even play golf at the weekend, just 9 holes, and just remember what it feels like to play, like to score, because it is, like you've mentioned, it is totally, totally different.
And last thing to remember is you will never beat me again after that performance, so.
We'll get out there and video your first round back.
Oh, Christ, don't. I'd be going for break 95 and they give some a massive buffer. Speaking of golfers that are going to break 95, this week's the Masters.
Yes.
And if I said this to you yesterday, I don't know if it's because I don't follow that many like proper golf accounts on social media, but I don't feel like there's been that much buzz yet about the Masters. I'm sure when this goes out on Tuesday, there will be a lot more, obviously. But I am excited. I must add, I'm not as excited as normal, and maybe that's because of the November Masters being so recently.
I think you're right.
But I also still am excited. Yeah. I'm probably a 7 where I might normally be 9 or 10.
But what's it been, 5 months?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's almost not give us time to miss it.
Well, I've asked you before this to give me 3 picks. So who you want to win, who you think will win, these could all be the same, who you think will win, and lastly, who is your outsider that you think is going to either win or place very highly. So I've got mine. I don't think they're the best shouts. Do you want to hear mine first, or do you want to go first?
Just one question on that. What classifies as an outsider?
Well, see, that's what, when I looked at the actual list, it's very hard. Other than the people that are playing that have won it years ago that still got a place, it's very hard. So my outsider isn't an outsider really at all. Okay. It's a bit of a rubbish shout, in fact. But I had a really good look this morning, and I'll explain who I've picked and why when it comes to the outsider.
Would you like me to, should we do who we want to win first?
Yeah, you go first on that, and then I'll follow you.
I want Lee Westwood to win.
Okay.
The Masters.
Yeah.
I want to see Lee Westwood putting on that green jacket, or having Dustin Johnson put on that green jacket come Sunday afternoon. I think for so many reasons. One, because he has always been perceived as the nearly man.
Yeah.
You know, he's not won a major yet.
Certainly recently as well.
Certainly recently. But also that almost gets like, he's 48, I think now. He has really kind of gone through it feels like I've really lived, grown up only knowing about Lee Westwood being a professional golfer.
Yeah.
Like, he's been there all through my kind of golfing life. I'd love to see him win a Masters. He's playing unbelievable golf at the moment. I think there's so much emphasis and stress on him, you know, what's the right word, as someone who bottles it. And I'd love to see, I'd love him to prove people wrong.
Yeah.
And I want him to finish his career a major champion. That's who I want to win the Masters.
Question on that then. From what I've seen of Lee Westwood at events or on your video you film with him, he seems like a really good guy. I think he's good on social media. Like you said, he's been, he turned pro in 1993, so I would have been two. So all my life I've known Lee Westwood. Question, this might not go down too well with some people, and it's not, again, open-ended question. He's a 47-year-old guy. How do you, how would you feel if he won the Masters in terms of the perception of golf to outsiders? So when you think about the best soccer players, footballers in the world, the young, athletic, you know, 35 is pretty much the end of their career. Does that, if he won at that age, how does that put golf in the spotlight of more people? It could be amazing because people think, actually, you can be at the top level of golf at the age of 47. It's not just for young men. Or does it make young people think, oh, golf's not cool if a guy who's 47 can win?
It's a good point. And I know you mentioned it on the, when
it was Tom Watson,
Tom Watson was going to win the Open.
What year was that?
Oh, I can't remember now.
When he nearly won the Open at Dingy, Troon, was it?
Yeah.
Can't remember.
No, it was. It was at Troon. What? I don't know. I don't know the answer. I think it would do good for England and getting more English people in, because I remember when Danny Willett won a few years ago.
Yeah, it
did feel like England golf just became huge story. Everyone was talking about, we've got an English champion, you know, he's on the TV here in England. So I think for England, it would be amazing because he'd do all the press trips. I think it's a wonderful story. I think, you know, with all the highs and lows. But you're right, it's probably not the aspirational pro that would bring in a massive amount of young golfers into the sport, potentially. But I might be proven wrong with that.
Bit of an open-ended question, really. But
who do you want to win?
So I've got two, which I know isn't. But I've got Bryson, because I love watching him play golf at the minute. I love watching him smash it. It excites me. He is my Tiger at the moment. Why Tiger's obviously, unfortunately, absent. Bryson's a guy that I turn on the golf to watch him play and watch him smack it. So I'd love to see him do well and win it. And I've also got Tommy Fleetwood. I just think he's due a major. He's been, last few years, he's really kind of upped his game. He's become, obviously, a global name, a household name to some degree. And I would like to see him get his first major under his belt. I'd like it to be the Open, but I'd also, I mean, the Open at, was it Birkdale, where he was on form and I had massive hopes for him. But the Masters for Tommy would be a nice look.
Yeah,
that long hair and the green jacket, I think he'd pull it off really well.
Yeah, I agree. And he would, again, for England, he'd be amazing.
Massive.
For junior golf, would be amazing. So yeah, for the industry, yeah. And obviously, I've met both Westwood and Tommy. They're both amazing people. Yeah, I'd love either of those to win.
So
my heart's
on
Westwood.
Think he's going to win?
Okay,
I'm intrigued. So you've gone with it.
And this is a weird one because I almost feel like it could be an outsider and could be I want him to win too.
Okay.
And it's a dead weird one.
Okay.
I think Paul Casey is going to win the Masters.
Interesting.
Now, I know that isn't, like, for some reason, I've just got this feeling. I don't know why. Obviously, I could look at the world ranking and go DJ or Bryson or Rory, any of those guys, and you think, yeah, they're going to win it. But I honestly think Paul Casey, again, he's got his game on at the moment. That's who I think is going to win the Masters. And you've heard it here first, everybody. Paul Casey is going to win the Masters, as well as Lee Westwood. I want them both to win.
So I've gone with JT, Justin Thomas.
Okay.
I think he came fourth last year, and he obviously recently won the Players. I just got a feeling he's going to do well. I'd like him to win.
Yeah.
I think he might win.
Yeah.
Again, with the Masters, it's the best field in the world, isn't it? So you look at the list of players, you think he could win, he could win.
I'm literally on the website now, and I'm trying to pick my guy who I'm thinking is the outsider.
My outsider's not an outsider.
And I'm literally looking at everyone going, yeah, he could win. Yeah, he could win. I mean, literally, an outsider would be someone like Freddie Couples.
Yeah.
Would be an outsider. But apart from that, like, I look at this list and anybody has the capabilities of winning.
Well, I'm going to shoot my outsider, and it's not an outsider, I'll be honest, but I've gone with Spieth. And the reason I go outsider,
I think he's an outsider.
Well, I think I've seen him at 16-1 odds, which is quite good odds. But, not low odds, should I say. He's had four top tens this year. So he's come back, hasn't he, really? This year has been his comeback year. He's obviously won the Masters, had two tied seconds, and he's had a third place. So he obviously likes Augusta. He can play well around Augusta. I think he's been close this year to winning. It feels weird calling him outside when he's a past champion and he's still kind of a young guy. But I also, although I could see him winning, I don't think he's going to win. So that's why I'm classing him as an outsider. Does that make sense?
I would definitely. If we were having this conversation last year, we'd have almost been laughing.
Mm.
He was a proper outsider last year. Like, not even close. This year, he's on the, I think, another good season. He's not no longer an outsider. Mm-hmm. So I think you can have him as an outsider.
Right. I was worried about that one.
I've got two.
Okay.
Okay.
Before you tell me, why have you got them as outsiders? And I'll try and guess one of them.
Maybe just not the names that people throw about winning the Masters. Do you get what I mean? If we asked, if we did a poll, and I don't think either of these two players would be in the top 15.
Top 15?
Votes from people.
Can you give me one clue and I'll just try and guess one?
Neither are English or UK or American.
I think you're going to go Victor Hovland.
No.
I don't think he's an massive outsider anyway.
I don't think you're going to maybe rate
John
Rahm as an outsider. No, he's not an outsider.
Well, I don't think he was. But when you said not American or not English,
so I've got two.
Think of people that are.
There's one golfer who always is up there every single Masters. So you think, well, how's that an outsider?
And not American.
Not American. But if you look at it on the grand field of betting in golf and stuff. I mean, let me just see where he is in the world ranking right now. Give me 2 seconds.
I feel like I want to keep saying people, but then they're not. Like, I was going to say Matthew Fitzpatrick, but he's not an outsider, is he?
Let me just get the world ranking up right now. Let me just. I'm going to go off world ranking to classify if these are outsiders.
I'm going to have one more guess. Jason Day.
No.
I don't know why. This is hard.
Right. One of my guys is, oh my goodness, 27th in the world.
Okay.
So would you class that as outside?
It depends hard, innit? I've got a very loose definition.
In fact, my other one, who I thought was going to be higher, is actually 32nd in the world. I'm going to class these as outsiders.
Okay, hit me.
Cameron Smith.
Yeah.
Just plays good.
Mm.
He's not the one who I think is going to do outsider. Louis Oosthuizen.
Yeah.
Big time. He is always,
he is always, up,
always
there.
Up there. Oh, sorry, popped the mic there. He's always up there. When it comes, so I think outsiders, where's Spieth in the world? Because I think Spieth is higher than that. Where's Spieth in the world? Don't know where he is right now. 53rd.
Peck. I'm looking forward to it. As I said, I'm not quite as excited as normally, but I think by the time this podcast actually comes out on Tuesday, I've had a few days to kind of get excited for it, watch little clips and teasers. The Masters app is always sick as well.
So good. So good.
I think it'll be good.
I'm looking forward to watching it.
You ready for the little surprise I had for you? So this morning, I was doing a little bit of prep for the podcast, looking at stuff about like electric golf trolleys and stuff like that. And I found an article online that I think I want to hear your take on. You ready for this?
Hit me.
10 reasons why British golfers have more fun than Americans.
Ooh.
And it was an article on golf.com. from July 15th. It's not a new article. I'm fortunate to have been to America 5 times in my life, but I've never once played golf in America.
Is
ever.
That right?
Never. So I don't feel like I can really have I can have an opinion, but I've not got an educated opinion on this, not an experience. So I'm going to go over the 10. I want you to say agree or disagree and see what you think. And also, we might put this as a clip on YouTube, so people in the comments below, make sure that if you're obviously American or British or likewise, let us know what you think.
I've got a funny feeling this is going to pop as a YouTube video.
Well, the first one is that people in Britain walk. So in America, and this is something you've said to me a lot of the time, it's very, very common for Americans to use carts, buggies as we call them in the UK, because obviously the temperature, loads of different reasons. Over here, it's so much more common that you either walk with your bag, use an electric golf trolley or pull trolley, anything like that. So that was the first one. Do you think that is a more, does that mean it's more fun in Britain or less fun? How would you see that we walk more often than our American counterparts?
I must admit, and I'm going to classify it as if I was away with the boys, having a weekend away, I'd want us all in buggies.
Okay.
Whether in the UK or, I just think it's got that vibe to it that's a much more kind of relaxed, you chuck a few drinks in the back, you maybe have a bit of music on, you're with a buggy partner. So I think, for me, if I'm looking as a fun element, and also it brings a different dynamic to it, if I'm just solely looking on fun, I honestly think golf in buggies, golf carts, is more fun.
So, do you want to keep a score then? You're going to one up to America?
Yeah.
Or, like, we'll do it as points, so they get 1 point.
Okay.
Okay. So, number two, this is some...
However...
Go on.
I do think more Americans should use electric golf
trolleys. Nice save.
Such as Motor Caddy, the number one leading electric golf trolley in the world.
Right. So, good save. Thanks. Number two, and this is something, again, I've got... I don't know if this is true or not, but I want to hear your take. Britons play more quickly than those guys in America. So apparently in America, it's seen as more of an all-day thing. You go to golf for the day. Whereas in England and Britain, there's this culture of it's more like, get out early, get home.
I would agree. When I've played golf in America, it just feels like more of a spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
Like you turn up, and it maybe because I'm almost more a tourist.
Yeah.
Like you get there early, you drop off your bag. Certainly if you're playing a nice golf course, you're going to have some food, you're going to hit some nice balls on the driving range and the putting green, chipping green. And you're right, because everyone's almost in holiday mode. I mean, I am when I'm out there, so it's mm-hmm. hard. I'm not a member of a golf club out in America, obviously. You do feel like it's a little bit more relaxed and you feel like... however, it can also be slow. Like, as in...
Because it is a full day thing, people are chilling out.
But as in, like, the golf can be slow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
I've played golf on courses that are busy. Everyone's kind of a bit more relaxed. And it's just like, oh, come on, guys. Let's speed this up
so
a little
bit. So which is more fun, then, would you say? Britain or America?
The
pace of play.
But then I've played in the UK where it's been slow.
Yeah. Is that a draw then?
Yeah, I can't give still, that to either.
It's still 1-0 to America.
Yeah, but I wouldn't agree that America is slower than UK. It's just I've experienced slow play in America and I have mm-hmm. experienced slow play in the UK. So I wouldn't say I could say one or the other on that.
So number three, and this might be because the article's a bit old, so I'm not sure on this one. We might disregard this. But it claims that Britons carry fewer gizmos than the Americans. So for example... lasers, GPSs, that apparently, according to this article, in the UK, they play quicker again because they're more like to go up to the ball, have a quick look, hit it, whereas the Americans are going to be more using lasers. Possibly the fact that they've used a car and they're then going to get a different club, etc. I don't know. So I'm not sure on that one if we want to include that or not. It's not
and
the best.
This almost feels like it's been written by an American
as
a perception on UK, because again, that's not probably the case in the UK.
Yeah.
I would say everyone's got gizmos as much as they have in the US.
So read that one out, maybe.
Yeah.
Next one, this is a really good one. It says that Britain, and again, not sure on it, but I want to hear your take. Britons don't obsess over their scores. So certainly before the world handicap system, possibly, handicaps were really only used in the UK and Britain for competitions. If you go up for a friendly knock, you don't really massively score. Whereas apparently they think in America that's more the case. So it's more kind of light-hearted.
I think the only difference is because, again, in America, you could hand the scorecard in when not playing in the competition.
Mm-hmm.
So score is a definite thing. The other thing they don't seem to do as much is play like match play.
Don't come on to that yet.
It feels like they're much more about stroke mm-hmm. play, their individual score. Like when I've been out there in America and suggested like match play, it's almost like, oh, right, I was just going to keep my own score. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think...
Well, yeah,
I'm going to come on to another one, I'm sure. Do we obsess about score? Do they obsess about score more than we do? I'd probably say they would, yeah.
Make it more fun for us then? Or
I would say it's more fun for us so because we have many more different formats.
So it's one all then?
Because we play, like, for me, and again, I might be wrong, but from what the American people, that they don't massively play Stableford.
Yeah.
Like, everything's stroke play, you got to count every single shot, where I think we've got much more variety in events that we play.
Well, point five, then, you've led on to that nicely, is that apparently in Britain, we embrace team play a lot more. So whether that be, like, foursomes or match play, or whatever it might be, we apparently do that more so. So that, again, is perceived as more fun.
Definitely. I would 100% agree with that. And maybe, is that why we're better at the Ryder Cup?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
So we say that's 2-1 to Britain.
Is that why all this comes out? Is that why Europe are much better at the Ryder Cup? That'll really get the comments going.
Next one, again, not sure on this one. I feel like I've said about a lot of them, but it's just hard to, like you said, it's hard to really imagine golf when you're in another country and you've never played.
Like I say, I have played quite a bit in America.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But not all like loads of times, but go on.
So apparently another reason why it's better is that Britons don't stop at halfway houses. So in America, there's more of a culture apparently of stopping after nine and having something to eat, having something to drink. Whereas in the UK, it's not really a thing massively. So therefore it speeds up play.
I would say we've become more Americanized in that department.
Okay.
I would definitely say back in the day, halfway houses weren't really a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're certainly because if you look at how very traditional golf courses in the UK were designed, certainly links golf courses, you'd play out away from the clubhouse, turn around and play back into the clubhouse for your 18 holes, like some of your links golf courses in America, in Scotland, etc. I think over time, when golf course design and architecture became a little bit more Americanized, like for example here the Marriott, mm-hmm. like you play a loop of 10 and then there's a halfway house designated, there's been thought behind where that goes. In America, I would definitely say the culture is like a prop, almost like a, not a meal, not a sit down meal, but the menu selection is much, much bigger. Mm-hmm. Like where we might grab a butty, pre-made butty sandwich, if people don't know what that is, a packet of crisp, a drink, and off you go, because you'd want to keep up the speed of play. In America, I've been known where you can literally, you can order off a proper menu, and you get proper food and selection. And
I would want to carry on playing golf after that.
It is a bit heavier. And you know what's another thing I've experienced as well, is like where you might order at the halfway house, and because again, you might not want to slow play up, they'll actually drive it out to you in another couple of holes. But I've had out on the golf course in America, like way too much like food, like the meal that you think, oh, I'll just order that pizza or whatever. And it's like a 12 inch like pizza. Do you know what I mean?
I think where we
would grab a pasty or a pie.
So who are you giving the point to then here? Can it be even split? Is one better than the other? Because to me, having some nice food half a round does sound quite fun. I don't know how hungry I would be.
The other big thing as well in America, and this I think it's just American culture anyway, like the drink selection is like massive.
Stay there on that one.
Like as in, I don't just mean alcoholic either. Like if you look at a fridge in America in a halfway house, you've got like your Gatorades, your waters.
Every monster flavour.
Like they've literally got a massive selection of drinks. Where in America, you're lucky if you get lukewarm water from some places. You know what I mean? So
that a draw then, different vibes. It's hard to split these, isn't it? Because it's hard to say what's more fun.
And again, I go back to why I think we've become more Americanized. I've been to many golf courses now in the UK where that culture has come over to the UK.
Okay, then. Well, next one then. This is a weird. It's got a weird title, but it's not what it sounds like. It says Brits drink and drive. Now, that doesn't mean they drink alcohol and then drive home. What it's basically saying is that the culture around drinking in the UK, and again, this might be an American perception rather than the truth, is that people in the UK might play golf and then have a beer, or, you know, maybe half, if there was a halfway hut or whatever, maybe half a beer or something. But it's kind of, it's not this kind of buddy trip style excess culture. So it's much more kind of toned down.
Way more toned down.
Apparently so. Now, I don't know if that is true, and also if that is more fun, but that is one of the points here.
Again, if I was, let's say I'm out with eight of my friends, we have two tea times, all playing buggies on a fun weekend away, whatever. If you said, do you want this to be happening in the UK or in America, I'd choose America for that exact point. So I am actually going to give that to the US.
Okay.
I know it's not a big drink culture, and it does scare me. And I think people listening should be aware of this. Like, it does scare me in the fact that, you know, people do drink out on the golf course and drive home. Yeah. Like, it shouldn't be allowed. And I think there should be some regulations around that. But I see members of golf courses drink after the round of golf and still drive home. Like, it is really silly. So just be careful if you are drinking on the golf course. It still counts. Do you know what I mean? I think some people kind of overlook that. But again, if I was out with the boys and, you know, having a fun time with buggies and a bit of music, my shirt untucked, and not feel like I'm going to get shouted at or looked down on, I would rather be in America for that. So I'm going to give that a point to America.
Okay, last couple then, last few. This is a really interesting one. This is definitely true. Apparently, Britons don't waste time on the range. So because of the golf course in the UK, often there's limited real estate, they're a lot older. People typically might just come hit a shot in the net if there isn't even if there is a net. You know, that's quite a lot of golfers don't have a net. Some do hit a couple of shots and then get onto the course. Whereas in America, there's a lot more emphasis on going to the range beforehand, hitting 50 balls, and that apparently isn't quite as fun. And it says here that even if you do find a golf course with a range in the UK, the chances are you'll need to supply and collect your own balls, which is, again, true at most golf courses. You take a practice bag or a shag bag full of balls, hit them, then have to collect them in.
Yeah, you don't even question it in America. You just presume there's going to be a driving range. You just presume there's going to be nice golf balls laid out for you in nice little pyramids, typically. That is better.
But I would class, I'd class as more fun, wouldn't you? That you can go to a range, hit 50 balls before you go and play and loosen up.
Yeah, so you're giving the points to America.
Yeah, but they're saying that that's better in the UK by not having that.
No, way better in America.
Because they're saying that we don't waste our time. But I see that as not a waste of time. No. If you pitch up half an hour before your tea time and whack, even if you just whack 20 balls, loosen up, it can be a good laugh with your 100%. Friends as well.
I think America definitely have the practice facilities and warm-up facilities nailed on. And again, because it comes down to that real estate, when they've designed golf courses in America, they've taken all this into consideration. Like, they're much more modern golf courses than we have over here. So they've really put the emphasis on, well, where's the practice ground going to be? Where's the chipping green going to be? How is it all going to work together? Where for us, certainly the older golf course, the practice ground, chipping green, putting green,
it's an afterthought, isn't it?
Way afterthought.
That for me is something that, as a around where I kind of live, a lot of the golf courses don't have amazing practice facilities. And to some degree, you could say, well, as long as the course is good. But there's sometimes after work on a summer's evening, it's lovely going hitting on a lovely chipping green with massive bunkers and everything. It's really good, isn't it? And certainly with the practice ground. But something we don't have as good in the UK, definitely.
That's where I'd say more modern golf courses here in the UK have had that American inspiration.
You're swaying more America here, you know, I think, as a rule now. Yeah. This one I don't think will interest you too much. Apparently, number nine... in Britain, we tee it up, we go on the course more often with our dogs than in America. It's more of a thing over here that golf courses will let you see your dog on.
I've almost not got an opinion on that because I'm not bothered either way. I'm not opposed to it as long as they're responsible and don't let them run in bunkers and crap everywhere. But generally, it doesn't oppose me having a dog on the golf course.
It's the last one. So you're very much US here then. And I don't think this last one will...
Do you know what scores?
I can't remember, but you're definitely going to get more US. The last one, which I don't really see as being a positive for Britain, but it's definitely true, is that Britons play on slower greens.
Agreed.
And they're saying that's better because if you're a kind of more average golfer, there's less, obviously, a massive, aggressive, fast putts that are going to go past the hole and less three putts, less four putts. So the slower greens are kind of a little bit more easy, potentially more interesting, and that the maintenance costs are reduced. And it can also speed up pace of play because obviously there's less putting and stuff. So I'm not sure on that one, really.
No, I think America's greens are ridiculously better than our greens.
So you would disagree with this article and you would say that Americans have more fun on the golf course than we do from those points.
Yeah, and probably the big thing is you always think the grass is greener on the other side. Probably if I was American...
It literally is greener over there, probably.
If I was American, I'd probably be looking over here and going, yeah, but that sounds quite... So it's just different. But I must admit, and this is probably... If we're using the word fun as being the main topic on this, I would honestly say Americans do have the setups to make it more fun for golfers.
I would say, adding on to that though, for someone again that's never played in America and also trying to get my head into Americans' minds, the perceptions are different. If I was in America, I would imagine every course is like Royal Birkdale in England, which isn't the case.
No.
And I also, in my head, I'm thinking that every American course is like some Sawgrass. Huge... Yeah, or like a Disney resort, like where it's got, like you said, loads of practice grounds and chipping greens and a huge halfway house. But in reality, I'm sure everyone isn't like that.
Yeah.
So it's probably...
And I've played some, what I would see as very mediocre golf courses in the UK. In the US, as I have the UK. And you're right, even the really mediocre ones in the US just still feel like they have some elements of that I think would do really well. Like just an okay practice ground, but they've got one. And things like that.
The good news is, let's give it maybe 5 years, we'll open the Rick Shields golf course.
Correct.
In England, and it will be the best. We'll fuse them both together, and it'll be the best of both worlds.
I like that.
Well done. Did you enjoy that little...
I did.
That was good. Like
a quiz.
Okay, you ready for your Dear Rick?
Let's do it.
Brought to you by our good friends at Motor Caddy. So as we said earlier on, every Dear Rick that gets read out from now and then the next 9 weeks is getting put into a special email folder, okay? Which is actually called... Motor Caddy Dear Rick. That's what I call the folder.
I mean,
why not? And then at the end of these 10 weeks, we're going to put the names into either a virtual hat or actually print them out and put them in your real hat, maybe.
Whoa.
Pick out two.
Okay.
Number two is going to win, or the first one is going to come second.
Ooh.
Or should we do first one first? What would make more sense? First one first. So first person is going to win it. Go on.
And we could pick the first person, put them to the side, pick the second person.
And then open the... Right, okay.
Because I think first pick should win first prize.
That's fair. So first pick, first prize, we'll get rid of second.
Correct.
Is going to win an electric trolley. I'm not sure of the model yet. I'll have to find out. It's going to be a good one.
Oh, my
proper
goodness.
Electric trolley, motor caddy one.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's a proper prize.
Oh, yeah, it's a proper prize. And then second place is going to win one of the hybrid stand bags. So it's a stand bag, but it can fit onto an electric trolley as well. So you've got the option.
Tell you what, motor caddy are being very nice to you guys, listeners.
Well, they want to give something back to the audience. So, are you ready for the first one then?
Let's do this.
And just lastly on this as well, they don't always have to be stupidly extravagant. I want to try and have a good mixture of like some that are quite serious and kind of quite wholesome, some that maybe are a bit silly. So, if you want to email us in, please do. It's podcast@rickshields.com.
I just thought, what about if they want to be anonymous?
Well, this today, I'm going to keep anonymous, but obviously I've got his details. So maybe then when they get picked out the house, out the cap. I don't know how we'll communicate to the audience. We'll refer back to what the email was about. So for today's one is about father-in-law. So we'll call this person Mr. Father-in-law Man or something like that. I don't know.
Okay.
So remind me, Rick, not to say this person's name because I feel like I'm going to... It's like I want to say it, but I'm not going to.
Okay.
So Dear Guy and Rick should actually be Dear Rick and Guy for Dear Rick, but we won't mark you down for that. I have an awkward dilemma. Please help, okay?
Okay.
So... You normally close your eyes at this point, Rick, so get into it. I played golf as a junior, and I played off a 16 handicap. I stopped playing at 14 years old as I was in a soccer football academy, and I couldn't play with my friends at a weekend. It took up all my time.
So he's American?
No, it said football, but I used soccer to try and make it more Americanized.
Like
I'm thinking of the audience, Rick. Now at 30, I've stopped playing football, bracket soccer. So I decided now was the time to play golf again. And I started after the first UK lockdown. I joined my local club straight away and took the plunge. Got myself the Maverick driver, 4 hybrid, the Max irons and a two ball fang putter. So it's gone big.
Flex.
Finished off with some Nike wedges and there I went. So he's got
Has he got an electric trolley?
Who knows, might do in 10 weeks' time. But this is where his dilemma starts. So I like his story so far. He's got back into golf. He spent a good chunk of money. Not that you have to. He's obviously wanted to get really into it. He's bought himself some good stuff. But here the dilemma starts. So my father-in-law, who plays up a 12 handicap, took me out to the golf course. And it was a great way to start and have a playing partner. The only thing is, I didn't realise he was a PGA Pro and Tour caddy during our rounds. So obviously he's not a PGA Tour Pro or caddy, but that's what he thinks he is when they're playing golf.
Uh-oh.
See? So I took his advice a lot of the time, but when I turned into a bit of a golf perv myself, I started to get lessons from a local golf centre at Adlington, which is down the road from us, which we know very well.
So he's local.
He's local. I'll be very handy to ship that trolley if he wins.
We'll ride it to him.
We've improved a lot. With the new handicap system in place, I've managed to get myself to 13 handicap, so he's one higher than his father-in-law. And I still get lessons on the course when I can. I still get golf lessons on the course when I don't feel I want his advice anymore. So he's got on to 13, he's having lessons at the golf academy, but his father-in-law, even though he's now as good as him, is still giving him lessons and giving him advice that obviously he shouldn't really be listening to, because he's seeing a PGA pro. During the second lockdown, my father-in-law stopped playing due to the kind of COVID and the worries of COVID, etc. And this meant I could start playing with different members. I really enjoyed my golf away from him. Plus, I played a lot better without him. Now, the father-in-law is back playing and he keeps booking me down to play with him in competitions and friendly roll-ups. I get a text off my mates asking if I'm playing with them, which I would prefer, but I haven't got the balls to tell my father-in-law I would prefer to play with other people. And here are the four reasons why I don't like playing with him.
Oh my God. By the way, just very quickly, if you're the father-in-law listening to his story, you know this is about you.
Well, exactly. You? I think the fact we've said it's Adlington, maybe his father-in-law isn't in our demographic, who knows. But he says this is the four reasons why.
Okay.
He tees off early, pre-8pm, and I prefer 10am. 8am. Yeah, definitely 8pm before that, 8am, and I prefer a 10am tee time.
Okay.
And there's a difference there, isn't there?
It's a little bit finicky, one.
Yeah, but think about this. 8am, you've got to be at the golf course for at least 7:30, really.
Yeah.
Let's say there's got to be leaving the house for 7:10, got to be up at 6:30.
Depends if he's got kids, this guy.
But I'm saying a 6:30 alarm call there.
Yeah, yeah.
At 10am can be a nice 8:45 roll out of bed.
But that's what I'm saying. It depends if Anonymous, Mr. Father-in-law, has kids. Because again, an 8am doesn't work for people with kids. Because he's got to drop the kids off at school. And a 10am is like perfect.
Oh yeah, but so unless it's a weekend. Even if he's not got kids, I don't have kids, but I'd rather play at 10 than 8 probably on a Saturday. Because it's a little bit more, still an early tee, still done by 2.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, point one.
Point two, if I duff a shot, if I hit a bad shot, he gives me a summary of why.
Oh, crap.
Number three is a really simple one. I prefer playing golf with my mates.
Yeah.
And then number four, he's an old school golf etiquette kind of guy. So by that, he's not really elaborated, but I'm guessing, I mean, obviously golf etiquette is necessary, but maybe he goes over the top with stuff, you know, really kind of quite finicky and, you know. So with all those in place, what can I do? Please help. So here, Rick, what does he do?
That is a tough, dear Rick. Crap.
Oh, Mull is.
It's because it's family as well.
It is.
Like, if it wasn't family.
I think it's almost worse. If it was his own father, he might be able to say something and say, Dad, stop giving me them tips.
Yeah.
Give me a din.
Yeah.
It's his father-in-law. It's his wife or his boy. I don't know if it's husband or whatever, but it's his partner's dad.
It's bloody hard, that one.
You know, the only way out I can see, and this isn't dear guy I know, but join another club. Make up a reason why you can't remember that club anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And say...
But that's extreme,
it is extreme, but what else could you do?
I think he's just got to grab the bulls by its horns. Is that the right saying? Grab the bull by its horns.
Yeah, that sounded wrong, but it is right.
Be brave. Tell him.
Right, do you want to... Okay.
This is a scenario.
Role play. I'm the father-in-law. So do you want to ring me or see me in face-to-face? How would you do it?
You ring me.
Ring, ring. Ring, ring.
Crap, it's the bloody father-in-law ring, again. Ring, ring. Oh, God, I don't want to answer it. Okay, I'm going to do it, okay.
Ring, ring.
Hello, Rick Shield speaking.
Now then, Sonny Jim, how are you getting on, mate? Fancy a tea time, 8am tomorrow morning. I'll pick you up on where. Got a pie in oven. Ready for you. Hello?
I didn't expect that going that way.
I can't hear you.
Hiya, Jim. When did you say we're going to tea?
You are?
When did you say we're going to tea?
8am. Got your pork pie in the oven.
Yeah, you've just blown everyone's ears out. Jim, okay, a bit of an issue. I can't do 8am tomorrow. I much prefer to play 10am.
You are? 10 a.m?
It's afternoon. Sorry, I'm playing.
But right, I'm going to stop the accent now. But we always play 8 a.m. You like the 8 a.m. tea time.
But is it, Jim? I don't.
What do you mean?
Oh, sorry, I feel like I'm breaking. It's harder because I can see your face and you look really upset. Be like a FaceTime. Okay, maybe that doesn't work. That's really tickled me. Oh, crap. I don't know what to say. Okay, I'll play it 8 a.m. I'll see you at 8.
I'll see you then, son. Ta-da. Everyone's happy.
but not him. I think we give him the jolly. I think as compensation, we give him a prize. Oh, my God. I don't know.
Now my shout of joining as a club doesn't sound that bad.
Oh, what do I do if, and hopefully, I don't think my father-in-law listens. My wife might pick up on this. What would I do? He doesn't annoy me, luckily, but if he did, what would I do?
Do you meet him halfway? Do you go with every other week? So you just say to him, look, Brian, I want to play on Saturday at 8 a.m, but the following week I'm playing with the lads at 10. So, and he'll go, oh, okay. And then you do it that way, and then slowly you wean your way off him.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout, is it?
Or, no, I was going to say, does he make a story up why he has to be in the house still at 8 o'clock and then he can only play at 10? I don't know.
Oh God, father-in-laws are bloody nightmares, aren't they? That's really good, that. I don't know. I'm stumped. I think that's a good way. Wean him off. Or if you are ballsy enough, just say, I don't want to play with you at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
I want to play with my mates at 10.
Maybe do that and let us know how it goes. And on the positive note, you could win an electric trolley.
I've got a better idea. Just split up from his wife or girlfriend or partner.
Have an affair. Yeah. And then, he'll be annoyed at you for having an affair.
Correct.
Perfect. So just so it's announced on the podcast, Rick Shields endorses affairs, extramarital affairs.
I think it's his only way out. Move on. The grass is always greener, as we've said in this podcast already.
Move to America, get a massive golf course with a big halfway hut.
Meet up with Cindy.
Yes.
That girl you went to college with, but kind of fell out of love with.
Yeah.
But she moved over to the States, and you thought, could I have had a chance with Cindy?
Has she had plastic surgery done? Because I feel like she has.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, lipo, plastic surgery, lip fillers, everything.
Breasts.
and just go and enjoy yourself. And Cindy's dad.
Yeah.
Big Hank.
He's got a few quid, I feel like.
He's got a few quid, but he's nice as pie.
Okay.
I mean, might rib you every time he sees you, give us a little punch in the ribs, but you can take that. Yeah. He doesn't play golf. He hates golf.
Yeah.
He hates it with a passion. He thinks you're the dweeb for playing golf.
Is he into... I feel like he's got a collection of something. Classic cars, maybe.
Yeah, classic cars or like...
He likes poker. Really into his poker.
He actually collects... hubcaps off cars.
Okay.
Like special edition ones. Right. He goes to conventions. But go meet up with Cindy, get rid of Sandra, and you're laughing.
Motor Caddy, I do apologise about this.
Oh, yeah, I forgot it.
We'll be better next week, I promise. So that was the dear Rick. If you want to get yours read out and get some absolutely top quality advice from Rick Shields, PGA Golf Professional, email podcast@rickshields.com. We will try our best to answer them.
I'm actually sweating. My hands are like sweaty. That was a good one, that.
So that, I've also got a nightmare golf story.
Okay.
As I always do with these, I kind of preempt it with, it's not the best ever. And I think it's because I don't know what I'm expecting. I don't know what I actually want from a nightmare golf shot story anymore. I think we've had some such amazing ones. But today I've gone for a really simple, classic, standard. Just a nice little bad shot, basically. Okay. So this is from Kobe Long. I think I can use his name because there's no reason why I shouldn't be able to. But basically he says, the following is something that happened to me during a monthly medal competition. I had teed up on the back nine and started with a bogey on a hard par four, but I wasn't feeling too bad at the beginning of my round. The next hole, number 11, is an uphill par three. It's about 189 yards from the whites. I get on the tee box, hit a 5-iron and land the ball about 3.5 foot to 4 foot from the hole. So I'm thinking, great, I've got a really good chance to get back to even par. And this downhill, slight left to right breaking putt, but nothing too difficult. My playing partners are getting the measuring tape to check out if I've won close to the pin. It's a really relaxed and kind of loose atmosphere with my playing partners. As I'm standing over the ball, I'm thinking, I've got this. I'm going to get in for a birdie too. I then proceed to put the ball and it slides by about 2.5 foot. So he's pretty much giving himself the same length of putt back. I just go to take this as an easy par putt, knock it in, no big deal. Same thing happens and it slides by again. I'm starting to get a little bit annoyed at this point. After missing my third putt in a row, my playing partner says, don't do an early L's and six putt it. As the putts keep on going, they're all within a 4 foot radius. Needless to say, I walked off the green with a 7 after landing it just 4 foot from the pin.
Oh my God.
This ruined my mindset and ended the tournament with a net 125. Needless to say, the next several weeks spent grinding on the practice putting green. Love the podcast.
Net 127.
That's what 125.
Wow.
So he
what handicap was he?
He didn't say his handicap, but I'm guessing he was, well, I don't know, he's 6-putted from 3.5 foot, which is pretty impressive.
Wow.
I feel like I'd love to see a clip of that because that would go viral. I feel like a 6-putt from that distance is probably harder than it is to hole it.
That's mad, isn't it? Bit yippy.
So if you've got a nightmare golf story as good as that, yeah, or better, feel free to email us again, podcast@rookshields.com.
Fire through some questions? Yeah, we're on an hour.
Oh, were we on an hour? Well, I've asked for Facebook questions, but I must admit I've not actually looked at the responses yet.
Well, let's just fire through a few fast ones. Okay. Fast-paced.
You don't need to find them.
I'll find them. I'm still laughing at what you said. I've had a story
I don't
before.
Know if that'll come out with the audio if it's too loud.
Oh, no, it's funny.
It's hard to find the questions now.
I've got it.
Just before we get on to the questions, did you see the tweet about last night? It really actually made me cry, I'll be honest. You did,
oh, yeah,
you liked
I did.
It. We had, and I'll read this out loud because it was done as an Apple review, so it's there for the kind of public to see. But we had, I won't read it all, it was quite a long review, but somebody left a review, and I feel like I'm welling up now, actually. He said, just a thank you from our family, it was 5 stars. And to dear Rick and Guy, I just want to drop you a message to firstly, thank you for the brilliant podcasts and videos. Over the past 6 weeks, my father has been in ICU with COVID and sadly passed away last week. Your podcast really kept him going in hospital and certainly helped me entertained during the difficult days walking around the hospital. And that was, that's, I mean, really we've had some amazing messages, but that one, I mean, I hate to use the word helped. I don't think we've helped in any way, shape or form, but to provide some level of comfort to the listener and his father when he was obviously still with us was amazing. So I sometimes joke about getting negative comments and I get to attach them sometimes, but comments like that, you think, flipping out, like that's what it's about, innit? I feel like I'm well enough again now.
Oh,
it just
nice.
It just was there. And it was the fact he said when I first read it, I thought he said that he listened to it, which he did, but the fact his father was listening as well, who sadly passed away, it was...
That's lovely. Just what you needed.
Yeah.
I've got some questions. Nick Highland. First off, great podcast. Second, I live in Augusta, Georgia.
Oh, nice.
My whole life, I have never been able to secure Masters tickets.
Oh, my days.
How would you feel living so close to a popular, prestigious tournament, but never been able to go?
Devastated.
That's horrendous, that, isn't it?
That's something, and this is a bold shout now, that kind of, well, for me, the Open is my favourite major, and it always will be, partly because I'm from England and it's obviously often held in Britain or whatever. That's one thing that puts me off the Masters a bit.
Yeah.
It's the super, super exclusivity of it.
And do you know what I think would really annoy him? I'm literally on his Facebook page now and it says from Augusta, Georgia. Anybody he speaks to in the golfing world, or where are you from, Nick? Oh, I'm from Augusta, Georgia. Whoa! Yeah. You must go to the Masters every year. And he's got to say, no, I've never been. I mean, I would almost ask him, you must have played Augusta.
Yeah.
Like, that's what, if you live in Augusta, I presume you must have played it. I don't know how or where. Like, he's tagged himself in Top Golf in Augusta. He got full set of clubs for Christmas, everything. Yet, he's never been to the Masters. It's a strange one, because you've got to either pay through the nose to go, or be very lucky in the ballot.
Yeah.
That's it. And you're right, compared to the Open, where you can literally go, it just because you can buy a ticket.
I absolutely adore the Open.
That is, you're right, that is one thing that kind of would...
Following on from that one, Niall Austin asked on the same Cook's thread, if you won the Masters, what would your meal be? I think we've probably done this before, but why it's the Masters week, what would your meal be, Rick? You won the Masters in 2020, November, you beat DJ in the playoff that nobody knows about, but you did.
Okay.
And I also won the year before in 2019, so I'm coming to your meal. I've got my green jacket, fits really well. What are we having for dinner?
Okay. These don't go together, but they're my favourite
chalk
foods.
And cheese.
I'm going to go, first off, pate starter.
I'm out straight away.
All right, wow.
Go on.
But there's an option to have ribs.
Okay. I'd rather have some chicken tenders, but fine. Carry on.
I just like pate starter.
Yeah.
That's it. And then I'd have proper traditional fish and chips.
Mm.
But like whale-sized fish.
Yeah.
Like fish, proper nice home-cooked chips, mushy peas, the works.
Yeah.
And then, I'm not a big dessert fan, even though you wouldn't think that looking at me, but I would go with, what would I go with? What's my, like creme brulee dessert.
Mm.
So none of them go together, but that's kind of what
I'd pick. It's your choice, isn't it?
What would you go with?
I think, and this is a controversial one when it's like such a big event, but a proper nice big cheeseburger. So like, not just some little pathetic McDonald's one. I'm talking like a proper big thick piece of like prime cut steak burger with cheese, burger sauce, too much sauce borderline. And also, this is a controversial shout now, and I accept any hate for this, so please do feel free to hate me for this. I'm not opposed sometimes to having a burger with a knife and fork. If it's very, very saucy, because you can get really into it without the sauce getting on your hands. Rick gave me a horrendous look there.
Interesting.
Have you never had a burger with a knife and fork?
I might have cut one in half, but yeah. I still want to pick it up.
You can if you want.
From Tom Ransom. Oh, did you do dessert?
No. I don't know. I'm not bothered about dessert.
Starter?
Starter would be like some really nice chicken tenders with buffalo sauce.
It's very American.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
I was trying to do an American accent then, but I couldn't think of one.
I feel like I'd want to go, my choice is like fish and chips, because I just feel like it's the popular thing to get food that you kind of grew up with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, because if you get, yeah, it's your time.
Like Danny Willett did like a Sunday roast or whatever.
That'd be good.
Tom Ransom. Hey, Guy and Rick. Love the podcast and all the content you guys give us all week in, week out from around the globe. Nice. Here's one from a standard Aussie lad in regards to Rick's departure with Nike.
Mm.
Would Rick ever sign up with another apparel sponsor or even with Nike again if approached? Or does he feel like no sponsors are better for his podcast, for his product, sorry, in regards to fans' opinions and having new fan trust his delivery of the product reviews, etc.? Well, I think that on the last line there, I never felt for one second Nike swayed people's opinions about my product reviews.
Oh, no.
That was the reason why I wore Nike, because they didn't make golf product, like golf clubs, when I started wearing Nike. So for me, I never felt like the sponsor. I've always been very selective with clothing brands. We've had quite a lot of clothing brand approaches in the last few weeks, as you can imagine, with the video after Nike. So there's some exciting ones potentially in the pipeline. I probably would just sway from brands who are associated with manufacturers.
Your Pumas, your FootJoys.
That's my only one, because I just feel like, for me personally, if I am testing a product from a driver company, and I can say this blue in the face, I'm not going to be biased and everything else, I think if anybody sees you wearing the brand of the company,
yeah,
it can't help but sway people into thinking you're going to be biased. Would I ever sign with a power brand again? Yes, definitely. Would I ever sign with Nike again? Yes, potentially. It's just got to be more on my terms rather than what they were trying to put across.
I think we can say this. We kind of, in a way, and this is fine, we want our cake and eat it. We want you to be wearing a apparel brand and get paid for it, but we don't want to do loads and loads to push it down people's throat, do we? Because we just don't want to offend the viewer. The viewer comes first at the end of the day, and that's the decision we've made at the moment. The viewer came before Nike.
Yeah.
So there is brands out there that are willing to let us have our cake and eat it, but it's just trying to find the right one, isn't it, ultimately?
That's it.
If let's just say... sounds stupid. I'm going to say Gucci because they don't make golf. So I don't want to say a golf brand. Let's say Gucci approached you and said, we want to pay you to wear our clothing, but you've got to do all this stuff all the time. It's like, well, no. It's not going to advise my viewer and annoy them and become just noise. It's not
exactly. happening. And that's the thing. That's where we're at the moment. There's lots of talks and lots of opportunities. But like I say, some brands will want kind of, they want the cake and eat it. And we're like, no, actually, we add the value. Yeah. We're the value piece. Like, you kick me out with the clothing, I think the next clothing sponsor will just be like, get loads of new attention, yeah. as you would imagine, because from all the hype we made about Nike. But like I say, and I think we made it super clear in that video, it wasn't a negative split with Nike. It's just that they wanted a different path than what we want, or what I mm-hmm. wanted, really. I still love the clothes. I'm still wearing a lot of it now. So stay tuned. I think there's some exciting things on the horizon. I would never say no to Nike if the option was right. But also, yeah, I am potentially looking for a powerless sponsor.
Yeah.
So if Gucci is listening, email Guy.
Yeah.
And we can get the ball rolling. One more.
If you've got one. Feels weird you found the questions. I quite like it. Are these on today's thing, by the way? Yeah, I've not seen these ones you've asked.
If you were a biscuit, what kind of biscuit are you? No. Give me an unpopular golf opinion. Can be anything.
Oh, I'm good at this.
Give me an unpopular golf opinion.
My favourite one is that the Ryder Cup's overrated, which I've done before on a podcast. New listeners might not be aware of.
Custom fitting.
Custom fitting's overrated.
Can I give an... let me think. An unpopular opinion.
I've got another one, actually. I think there's become a culture now that it's almost... people should be ashamed by buying new clubs, because people know now that technology has plateaued with drivers, with irons, with everything, really. So therefore, if you've got a set of clubs that are 5 years old or 10 years old, there's absolutely no need to swap them. And I completely agree with that. But also, I've seen sometimes a bit of a culture online when a brand bring out a new product and people buy it. Sometimes they get a bit negative. They go, why have you bothered with that? It's no better than last year's or whatever. But equally, if you've worked hard and you've got some cash to spend and you want a new driver, it's absolutely fine to buy one, as long as you're not under the illusion that it's going to perform massively any better than last year's. Don't know if that's quite one or not.
I think it is. I don't know if I've got one.
Lastly, as well, actually, another one. I think you agree with this. Well, you do, you've said it before. I also think it's another opinion when people, like, so Bentley make golf clubs and charge about $6,000 a set of golf clubs. Yes. It drives people insane. I love it.
Yeah.
Because Bentley make £100,000, £400,000 cars. Their golf clubs aren't claiming, whereas the cars do perform amazing, their golf clubs aren't claiming to be better than Titleist. Well, they might be, but they're not going to be. But for that consumer that just wants to buy stupid expensive stuff, and I think there's a place for it.
Agreed. Unpopular opinion. I think novelty head covers should be banned.
I'd agree.
Like, proper novelty ones. Like
having your own logo on your driver, for example.
That's not novelty, but like Popeye head covers.
I know someone in mind you're thinking of here.
Yeah, Rob Potter. That's I feel like we'd say him every... We should get him on the podcast.
We'd be good one, Rob Potter.
Let's get him on the podcast soon. Okay. I think we've given
in the new studio fashion. We'll get him in.
Yeah, exactly.
Rob Potter, if you're listening, or someone tell Rob if he's not.
What else? That's about it.
That's been a good one.
Really good.
If you...
Oh, by the way, last thing, a lot of people are queuing up to play me in the golf world.
That's because you shout the odds all the time.
A lot of people. I think a lot more will want to play me after they see me shoot 77.
last couple of things, then, just a bit of housekeeping. If you've enjoyed the podcast and you're on Apple and you want to rate it, if you've not done already, please do. We appreciate every single review, and certainly ones like that one we read out earlier on. That was just, I mean, they're not all going to be like that, but that was just ridiculous. That was so, we felt so humbled by that. But please give us 5 stars, hopefully. That's always nice. Any emails, podcast@rickshields.com. Check out the Instagram, etc., at the Rick Shields Golf Show. And also, don't forget that you need to make it your ambition to get into the clubhouse. So if you've listened to every single episode of the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, you're in the clubhouse. It's becoming a very elite club, and we always like it. People leave comments and say, I'm in the clubhouse, because they know what's going down if you're in the clubhouse. Thanks to our sponsor as well, Motor Caddy. We're not going to push it down your throat all the time, so don't worry about that. We wanted to get a sponsor on board that we felt we believed in the product, but didn't want too much from us. So that's going to be really exciting for the next 9 weeks.
It's going to be good. Guys, thanks for listening to episode 69 of the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast. Enjoy the Masters, and come on, Lee Westwood.
Yep. Just one second, Matt. Just going to do the intro, so don't.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.